I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Well, if they do draw that game, then maybe they might have to take a leaf out of a game that happened in Portugal. You can see where I'm going with it.
Leaf out of a game. What?
Let me do that again. Can you make it make sense? I'm only joking. It's a joke.
My lords, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Football Ramble. Lovely to have you back. Pete's here.
Hello.
Luke is here.
All right.
And James or Jim, the answers to both, is here.
Hello.
Gentlemen, it's been a lovely time of international football of late. Brazil were playing England, I think it was. And
somewhat vaguely resembled England. Anyway.
Ooh.
Political.
They had the right replica shirt. So.
Yeah, that's exactly it, Pete.
But the opening question is, what is your favourite goal scored by a Brazilian team of all time?
I'm going to go with Socrates in the 1982 World Cup against what were then the USSR.
Oh, great one!
Yeah, it's a screamer, that, because Socrates was a very slow player.
Wasn't he?
He just sort of used to amble about and just, like, by virtue of being better than everyone else, it wouldn't really matter. And the ball came to him quite far out, and he just sort of sidestepped two players really casually, almost, in my mind, he's having a fag and, like, just sort of drinking at the same time. He just belts it, in it goes, top corner, lovely.
He was a graceful player, Socrates, when he got going. I was saying the same to DeMarcus on the way here on the train, that you're right, he wasn't your traditional quick player, but when he hit top whack, he was very graceful in a Vieira-style way, quite rangy, quite leggy.
Great hair and great beard. James, I bloody love you for saying that.
Also, Socrates is his real name, which is very unusual for Brazilians.
And he's also got a brother named after another philosopher. That's a true
Nietzsche.
Story as well. I can't remember his name.
That is a fantastic start, James, and I'm proud of you. Luke?
I'm going to go for... and you know me, sketchy on the details, as always. But Marcus, you'll no doubt pull me out if I get it wrong. 2006 World Cup.
Yep.
R9 Ronaldo's goal to make him the World Cup's all-time leading scorer against Ghana.
Yeah.
Ball through from Kaká.
Yeah.
He's beat the offside trap rapido quick, and he sold the keeper a little lollipop to sit him down. He's gone round him and slotted it in.
Okay, you can have that one. I'm surprised that's... Well, I suppose it's your favourite one.
I thought I'd do a little bit... I thought it was
but
symbolic.
That was a monumental one.
Oh, it's symbolic.
Exactly.
I mean, Ronaldo is now the world's... The biggest scorer at World Cups of all time. So, yeah, you know, it's a symbolic one.
Mm.
I'm not going to go for the obvious.
It's an achievement that's worth having. Pete.
Oh, I've got that achievement. I did that.
Did you?
I did that before him. He took it off me, yeah.
Did he?
No, I'm going to go for Carlos Alberto in the 1970 World Cup.
But of course.
Well, yeah, of course. But of course.
You can't go through that without mentioning that one.
Just Pelé's sort of complete... It just doesn't look like he's got anything on, and then he notices... It doesn't even look like he looks to it.
No, he doesn't. I think he does.
Yeah. He just strokes it out and... Alberto just slams it in. It's lovely.
I did a very similar one, actually, Pete. A layoff for Marcus in the recent game against 4-4-2. The only difference between... and Marcus did score, but the only difference between mine and Pele's was that mine was a back heel.
The only difference between my fin is that I hit it in off the bar.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, it's true, yeah. Five-a-side goal crossbar. And
in that same World Cup, Pele had a couple of misses that are better than most goals.
Yeah, he did.
It was his Uruguay, was it?
Yeah.
When he ran, he dummied it against the keeper.
Yeah. Oh.
That's a legendary miss.
And the one from the halfway line, obviously.
Yeah. That was the same game, I think.
Was it?
I think so.
What a game it was. I was a big fan of the Kaká goal against Argentina at the friendly at Emirates.
Oh, yeah, where he bombed
I'm going to go for a Socrates one as well, actually. And it was in the same World Cup. I was looking at the 1982 World Cup, and there's so many great goals in that tournament. Well, I'm actually... Edda scored one against Scotland. A chip.
Was it Edda?
header. Hey, good. Excellent.
That was off the cuff as well.
Yeah, always is.
That's why they pay me the big bananas.
We don't. It was in the corner. He was like with the corner ball. He's chipped over the keeper. But the other one, the Socrates one, was against Italy when he kind of played a lovely layoff. He played a ball into...
Bit of a 1-2, wasn't it?
Yeah, but the Brazilians back-heeled it, I think, yeah. And he just burst through that Italian defence and slotted past the helpless Dinos off.
Yeah. good goal. Could have picked in any number of fantastic...
Well, only one.
Goals. Well, there was there's an array to choose from, Joe. Just because you're wearing your Brazil T-shirt...
Yeah, he is as well!
Yeah, in special celebration.
I am, yeah.
This is where you usually say honourable mentions, but I think I've already done a few.
Yeah, we've got enough.
We'd be all day. Yeah,
we would be all day. I mean, it's... I think I would get absolutely hung, drawn, called if I didn't give the points to Pete Donaldson.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah.
Come on, it was the ultimate one.
It was
one.
An easy decision.
I think so.
but well, let's move on to proceedings. England versus Brazil. John Terry said that Brazil won't be a problem at the World Cup.
I agree.
It
definitely won't be a problem.
I beg. With absolute all my being to differ.
Yeah. It won't be a problem for them.
It won't be a problem.
Yeah. When they absolutely destroy us. Yeah. You know. The thing was, we had a second string England team and so we only lost 1-0. They didn't even care. They weren't even trying. They were not trying.
But you saw something like it was quite a composed, decent, organised first half from England. I thought defensively, certainly,
without really touching the ball.
Well, exactly. And then as soon as Brazil sort of went, we should score a goal, shouldn't we? It's kind of getting time, isn't it?
So, yeah.
And they scored a goal, and then they just started fast playing it about like they do, and we couldn't get the ball back off them. Yeah. It was embarrassing.
Yeah, afterwards, you had like Ian Wright on ITV going, "Well, they need to be more direct. They need to be more sort of creative. They need to." You know, just attack more and like score. It's like, of course they do. You couldn't get the ball. What were you watching,
James? They needed to score goals as well.
Yeah, well, exactly. That would have been a plus.
It's a piece of advice I always give.
The one thing I would have pointed out was that, like, Michel Bastos was playing. Was playing left back for Brazil.
Yeah, that's right.
And he plays right wing for Lyon.
Well, no, he does play centre back at times, I think, doesn't he?
No, he plays right wing for Lyon, and he has played on the left before, but
right, okay.
for Lyon, he's definitely played right wing. So it's like, well, we haven't got a left back. Who are they playing at right midfield? John Wrong Phillips. I would just stick him in. And the thing was, Wrong Phillips was still getting roasted.
Wrong Phillips roasts himself, doesn't he? Yeah. He sort of loses the ball and just wonders where it is. Nilmar was impressive.
He was.
Villarreal, isn't he? He's very, very quick.
I thought it was a shame because I thought Wes Brown is kind of if it's a second string England 11, then I think Wes Brown's kind of earned that because I think he's played well of late.
He didn't play that well against Brazil, I don't think.
No. But I just thought it was a shame for him. It was a bit of a comeback, come down for him on his comeback. Because
I just think he looked tired by the time
it was hot.
60 minutes when he made that mistake for the penalty. Was it 60 minutes?
Foster was lucky to stay on the pitch there.
Oh, incredibly lucky.
Oh, because it was a friendly. If it wasn't a friendly, he'd been off, no doubt. Yeah. But that was completely not his fault, though. I mean,
it was like in Ukraine.
Absolutely.
When Rob Green was sent off.
I mean, if it was a competitive game, he would have gone. So if that's in the World Cup, we'd have no keeper.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I think it's worth pointing out that in that heat, which is obviously going to be oppressive...
It is a factor.
And when you spend so much time chasing down shadows and trying to get the ball, you get tired. I mean, an hour is enough, you know. The most worrying thing for me is that out of that back four... back five, including the keeper. I mean, I'd be reasonably happy with Ben Foster if he can keep his confidence. But apart from that, Matthew Upson's the only person I'd have anywhere near.
I think Upson did very, very well. And I think one thing I think was really encouraging about Upson is if we do get an injury, I can see him being a player that will really step up when it sort of backs to the wall.
He made some real last-ditch tackles.
Yeah. He was very, very good.
I think he was solid.
He's growing all the time. I thought
Lescott played a few long balls, didn't he?
I don't think Lescott should be anywhere near the team.
Well, Lescott and Wayne Bridge are doing the same thing. Rio Ferdinand's quite guilty of this. In tournaments, just like defenders sort of like carrying the ball out of the defence and then just lunking a long ball to no one.
Yeah.
Why do England do this?
But you saw some of the Brazilian players, you know, particularly the fullbacks, and when they had the ball and they were really under pressure, even then they won't lump it.
No, yeah, absolutely.
It's just a kind of a...
But the difference, they'd pass about the goalkeeper, and the goalkeeper would have enough confidence to play... That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
But route one stuff, thinking would just be kicking it.
But that's good. But it's true, you know, when you're young kids, you know, the defenders, you don't do ball work with them.
No.
Why do they need to be able to play on the ball? But even, as you say, the keeper...
But you look at the midfield as well. I mean, Kikar is a magnificent footballer. He's fantastic talent. We all know that. And Jermaine Jenas, and he's not going to get in the England team. He probably won't be in the squad for the World Cup.
I'd rather Bullard.
The fact that, well, there you go. The fact that those people are dropping like flies means he's got to go. Mm. But my main gripe with Jenas, and I know people get on his back and stuff, and he has clearly got an attitude problem because he's got. I was chatting to a friend of mine, who's a Spurs fan today, and he said, you know, he's got twice the ability that Palacios has got. But Palacios is twice the player. Yeah, so why is that? And it's obviously an attitude problem. But my main gripe with him against Brazil was that, OK, we know Kaká's a good player. Yeah. We're not seriously going to expect you to outplay Kaká. But at least make it tough for him. Yeah. At least run. No, it's a serious point.
No,
at least get on his touch and make it difficult for him to play.
Genus very much seemed to sort of look as if, like, oh, no, Gareth does that.
Yeah. You know what I mean? I felt sorry for Gareth Barry in that game.
Oh, he's an honest, hard-working field player.
Yeah, I really did. I mean, Barry's on the plane. There's no doubt about that. And I didn't think Barry had a particularly fantastic game against Brazil.
He
but he's never going
game,
to.
Though, didn't he?
He's never going to have a great game against, as you say.
I kind of felt sorry for Bent, to be honest.
I did.
But I mean, how much can you learn from a match against Brazil? It's more about getting the team together and stuff and getting them training. But
I mean, maybe a positive is James Milner. I mean, he is playing against Maicon, probably the best right back. Maybe Danny Alves might not agree with me. But
Maicon is a superb player. He's an absolute beast.
I thought Milner did well.
A lot of the Brazilian players are actually very sort of physically imposing, which is something you forget because they're all so skillful. But one thing I will say, Julio Baptista is not Brazilian. I'm not having it. He's a fucking liar. He has bought a passport off someone to just.
There was one point where the Brazil were on the break and it came to Baptista and he's completely shinned.
But that was 2-0 then. Do you know what I mean? Exactly. Like any other player.
Yeah. Oh, it would have been. It would have been, definitely.
I just sort of think, I don't know, understand why they didn't bring. Was Cole was fit, wasn't he? He was all right, wasn't he?
Joe Cole.
He could have played.
Milner on the right. That would have been a more accurate representation of what they might play.
It's a shame Ashley Young didn't get run out, I thought, because he's untested.
Well. Yeah. The right flip has just got. Listen, I know it's bordering on becoming a fucking crusade, but he's got to be binned off. Capello did say, which hasn't really been picked up on by a lot of the newspapers, Capello did say, I've learnt a lot about certain fringe players and I think what he meant by that was the game passes players like Jenas and Wright Phillips and Huddleston when he came on, but he's still young, so we give him a bit of credit.
It's difficult for Huddleston coming into
that. Yeah, of course it is.
Phillips had a lot of the ball, and that's what I don't understand why he couldn't do anything with it.
Well, the game passes them by, a lot of these players, and I think it's a shame, but I mean, the reality of the situation is, if England
we need D-back.
Yeah, we do. That's a valid point because we need someone to slow the game down and hold on to the ball.
Exactly.
At the other extreme, though, you've got Lennon and Theo Walcott, if you can stay fit, surely ahead of Sean Wright Phillips. And Sean Wright Phillips is in there to do what those two players do far more effectively.
Yeah.
I don't understand why they brought on Crouch. Why did that? Because
Plan B.
Capello's known to be a great on the day, the best manager. He's not amazing at the build-up, but on the day he knows how to make a substitution. But bringing Crouch on,
just give him better rest.
The thing about Crouch, though, Pete, is he does have a very good touch for quite a big man.
I think you're right. I think that right midfield berth, if you take Beckham aside, there's a different sort of kettle of fish. You've got Wright Phillips, Walcott, and Lennon, and they've each got sort of weaknesses to their game. But I would say that Lennon is, for me, the best option.
But Pete says you can stick Milner there, you can stick Joe Cole there.
But I think Milner's very much a utility player. He can play either side, so just I'd bring him anywhere simply because...
Yeah. I'll play him in goal!
If everybody was fit, I'd have Joe Cole on the left.
Yeah.
Well, look, let's move on to the games that actually mattered. Ireland were quite unlucky against France.
Yeah, I felt for them. Yeah. I saw that game and I thought that first half they're okay. I thought they looked reasonably comfortable. But second half, I think France just stepped it up.
It just must be a sickener to lose in a really important game like that by a deflected goal.
Yes, exactly.
That superb piece of defending by Evra to stop that open goal was unbelievable.
Oh, it'd be incredible, wouldn't it?
I just think it's going to be a bridge too far for them now. It's a shame. I'd like to see them there because they'll take a lot of fans to the World Cup. But I think the only chance I've got, and it is a real slight chance, in my opinion, and obviously I've been wrong a billion times before, is that they've got a sort of outside chance of a real backs-to-the-wall, early goal, 1-0, defend for your lifestyle performance, and then win on penalties or something.
Yeah, well, you know, France might Dominesh it up. They might
exactly.
Goalkeeper might go mad, get sent off. You never... Let's pray for something like that, because I'd love to see Ireland there.
Russia beat Slovenia 2-1. I think that's just not a bad result for Slovenia. Because that was in Russia.
They would have taken that, I think.
Yeah, and Portugal beat Bosnia 1-0, and Ukraine... and Greece drew 0-0. So who do you think?
What a game! Imagine that game.
God. One of them is going to go through.
Yeah, they are.
Who'd you fancy out of those?
I think Portugal. It's a shame because I'd like to see Bosnia go there because they're so exciting going forward. Mm. I think Portugal will probably do enough. I think that because the game, the 0-0 Ukraine Greece was in the Ukraine, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
So you got you've got to fancy Ukraine then, really, because they've not conceded an away goal. It's difficult to say. I don't know an awful lot about Greece at the moment. I know they used to be really boring, but they're probably not now, and I'm making myself look like a twat.
On sort of current results, I don't think there's one high-profile casualty.
No, there isn't.
Anywhere in the world.
Kind of James, it's only half-time. It's only half-time in those games.
Well, the suspect ones people saying are Portugal.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they'd take that, wouldn't they? That's an all right game. They've not conceded an away goal.
I think so. But that's, I think, the one that people, you know, without Cristiano Ronaldo, people are saying, oh, Bosnia, you know, good forward, good going forward, you know, intimidating home atmosphere.
You'd fancy Bosnia to score at home, but at the same time, you'd probably fancy them to leave the back gate open. So I think Portugal will probably go through. That's my rationale. That's my reason behind it.
Or maybe Portugal will, if that game draws, they might have to win it through the medium of youngest team.
What are you talking about, mate?
Well, in Portugal, there's a league, Liga Vitalis, and one of the teams there, called Portimonense, they're through to the next round of the Carlsberg Cup, which, of course, is the big one.
The best league cup in Portugal.
Coming from Portugal. In Group A, all three teams finished level on points and no goals scored. And the competition regulations dictate that the winners would be decided by the youngest average age of the player's youth.
That's crazy.
It's insane.
Right? So this side, Portimonense, the coach, Litos, he knew this was a fact. So in the 91st minute, he replaced the veteran goalkeeper, Pedro Silva, who's 35 years old, with a 19-year-old backup keeper.
That's brilliant.
Which made all the difference.
Masterstroke.
It was literally a match-winning substitute.
Imagine if Sam Allardyce had done that. How pleased he'd be of himself.
Oh, my goodness. Well, it reduced their average age to 24.5 years, and compared to the other two teams whose average age was 24.6 and 25.4, they went through to the next round.
Jesus. Outrageous.
I read about this as well, right? And something really, really odd. Like, I think this had already made the news, right? Because it had been like a floodlight failure or something like that. So this game was actually like a replay of a bit of the game. This was only ever meant to go on for 39 minutes.
And it ended like this.
It's insane, isn't it? Surely you go on sort of most shots on target rather than age.
Well, look what they're doing in Egypt and Algeria. They're doing a replay, aren't they? So...
Well, that's a playoff. That is slightly different. But yes, that does move us on to the match of hate, as it's called. Egypt and Algeria were going into the match. Algeria, if they lost 1-0, that was good enough for them to go through to the World Cup. Egypt needed to win by two goals. And they did. They scored a 95th-minute header. We had a couple of emails about this game. Amir Zaki scored.
Who's he playing for now? I don't know. He's gone AWOL.
Is he not playing in Egypt?
Oh, you might be, yeah, I suppose.
Oh, I don't know. But one of the Algerian players, Kahled Lemoucia, he said that FIFA should have postponed the match against Egypt after three Algerian players were hurt on Thursday when their bus was stoned as they travelled to their hotel in Cairo. When they talk about the match of hate, there is real hatred here. There's a lot of previous as well.
Yeah, because they've got form, I was going to say. This fixture particularly has got form, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, he said that if that happened in Algeria to Egyptians, you know, they would have asked for a walkover and they would have got it.
Well, because Egypt are the darlings of Africa, because they're African nations champions and stuff like that.
Well, I don't know. That's just what he's kind of implying
here. It's not very nice to see, really.
No, absolutely not.
The
Egyptian embassies had a bit of trouble in Algeria since then.
There was trouble in France as well for the Algerian population in France.
Oh, was there?
I think so, yeah. Mm. And so they've got to play a playoff because they're equal on points, goal difference, goal scored and head-to-head.
The lot.
So that they've got to do a playoff.
And I think they're playing in Sudan.
Yeah, they are, in Khartoum, yeah.
They've got to make the trip. Yeah, this fixture in 1989 when they were going for qualification for Italia 90, all absolutely kicked off.
Yeah, Egypt went through, didn't they?
They did go through, but it was unbelievable scenes. You know, one of the Algerian guys bottled the Egyptian doctor.
Blinded or something?
He did, yeah. And they were bombarding the referee after the full time. Some of the Algerian players were throwing whatever they could find. There were plants and all sorts of things into the crowd.
Don't put a plant in the stadium.
No, it won't grow. Not enough sunlight.
Only going to become a missile.
So that is worth keeping your eye on to see what happens in Sudan.
Didn't like the Egyptian FA say that it was that the Algerians had faked it?
Yeah, they did.
When they got their bus
They said they staged it.
Did they?
It's all going on.
And they're all bleeding walking in the hotel.
Yeah. It's like that rugby coach who made it. Take so much weight, man.
Oh, dear. But after the one in the late 80s, 2 years later, the African Cup of Nations was in Algeria, and this obviously really, really irked the Algerians. Egypt refused to send a team there to the African Cup of Nations.
Oh, and they sent a youth team, didn't they?
They did, because FIFA eventually said, well, you're going to be kicked out of the whole thing, and they went, all right, and they just sent a youth team over there.
How disrespectful.
Yeah. I love FIFA just not really taking an interest. Well, we'll just kick you out.
Yeah. So basically, I wonder, as long as we can force you into a position where we don't actually have to do anything, then.
Jack Warner's on the phone, yeah? Yeah? All right, yeah. Do you want to buy some tickets?
Entertain me.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Perform for me.
He needs some sweet chin music, that man.
Yeah, he does sweet chin music, yeah.
Cameroon are through.
They are.
They are indeed. They beat Morocco 2-0.
They went through ahead of Gabon, didn't they?
They did go through.
Daniel Kusan's Gabon.
Of course.
Daniel Kusan plays for Gabon.
So like Bram Stoker's Dracula.
he's the most high-profile player.
Well, absolutely. Can you name me another Gabonian?
I can't, but I'm sure plenty of listeners can, and we'll get loads of emails.
Absolutely.
Now, going, you fucking idiot. What about so-and-so? Plays for Pompey.
Nigeria have gone through. I was concerned for the Nigerians because Tunisia went to Mozambique and a point, I forget the goal difference, but Tunisia's hands were in their...
Yeah, Yakuba scored, didn't he?
Was in their own hands. Martin's got the winner. He got the winner. And in the 83rd minute against, they beat Kenya 3-2 and Tunisia lost 1-0 in Mozambique. Because I think they said Tunisia were very, very cautious. Had they have gone for that? I mean...
Super Eagles are going to be my African team in the World Cup next year, I think.
Well, you know I'm an honorary Ghanaian.
Yeah, you're a black star.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm going to support the Indomitable Lions just so I can say that.
Yeah.
Actually, I like the elephants as well, though.
But yeah, you support Newcastle.
I'm the Reunion Isles.
Yeah, of course.
Laura Bear, we mentioned them last week.
I don't think they're going to be in there.
Oh,
they
come
might
on
do.
Now.
So yeah,
start a campaign, please.
Well, the Ivory Coast and Ghana are already there, so four West African sides go through, and then there'll be one North African side in the form of Egypt or Algeria. In Latin America, Uruguay beat Costa Rica 1-0 in Costa Rica.
That's only the first leg, though, right?
They look pretty good.
Yeah, they're pretty. No, I'm pleased for Uruguay, actually, because, you know, players like Forlan and the boy who plays for Ajax.
Suarez.
It'd be good to see them up front, actually, in the World Cup, because they were a bit anonymous against Argentina.
And they've won it, haven't they? They're a big, big part of World Cup history. The first one was there, wasn't it? And it's just, you know, it'd be good to see them sort of re-establish themselves.
Another team, big part of World Cup history, have qualified. New Zealand beat Bahrain
1-0. Never forget that side of 1982. Yeah. That's what I say. I'll tell you something.
And you live and die by that, so.
Yeah, I always.
New Zealand have qualified. Don't you have a link with one of their potential players?
Thanks for asking, Marcus. Yes,
well,
I do.
Go on, then.
When I played football out in New Zealand in the glorious Indian summer of 2003.
In the Bongalonga.
When I was in my pomp.
Silly name.
Yeah, it was a silly name. I played with a guy who went on to become right back for New Zealand. I think he's got 6 or 7 caps. James Pritchett, his name is. But he's not been in the squad for about a year now. I sent him a little message today saying, hello, Leroy Leiter. If he's going to be in the squad, so if he does indeed go, we'll get him on.
That's your best impression of Andy Burton.
It's quite a good value. Yeah, well, you know, I've become the man I hate.
There are some other international friendlies, along with the England, Brazil, were Wales 3, Scotland 0.
Burley's gone.
Yeah,
he's gone.
Aaron Ramsey's done for him.
Yeah, but Burley's record for Scotland is absolutely abysmal. I think he was in charge for 14 games and they lost 8 of them. Mm. I mean, come on. Come on now. Yeah, they were a good team when he took over. Let's be fair.
Oh, yeah, Walter Smith is the
best player that they'd been for a long time, haven't they?
Mm. And he's just taken them back into the doldrums, so he's gone now. He'll probably turn up at Pompey.
Who said that they wouldn't take the job today?
Strachan? It seems logical.
No, Graeme Souness. Graeme Souness.
Didn't Souness say, I'm not taking the job, they haven't got any good players? He practically said that. Yeah.
Darren Fletcher and I would disagree with
that. Darren Fletcher and who else exactly would disagree? You're not a Scottish player.
I think James McFadden's a good player.
I can still disagree with the man what he says.
To be fair, I'm being a bit unfair to Graeme Souness. He did sort of
you were going to say Scotland then?
No, I'm not being unfair to them. Souness did sort of implied that, and that's why he said he wouldn't take the job, pretty much.
I'm glad. I think Souness is quite a good pundit. But I'd rather see him on the TV.
Their national game's in disarray. Their domestic game's in disarray. Yes.
Oh, Jim Lovejoy kicked off a serious debate in the week. Did you see that?
About the
Celtic and Rangers coming to the Premier League. Scary when that happens.
But Wales played well, though. I mean, it's exciting times for them. Aaron Ramsey would think so.
I think they've got some good players. Aaron Ramsey's a superb young man, isn't he?
There's a little story. One of their former players, Robbie Savage.
Oh, yeah.
Derby County were flying out to Amsterdam for a friendly against Den Haag the other day, and he was left a little embarrassed because they turned up at the airport at 4 a.m.
Just for being him?
Well, he turned up at the airport at 4 a.m. That's obviously when they were
flying out,
and he didn't have his passport. He had his wife's passport.
I imagine they look pretty similar anyway.
Well, he said, I offered to shave my beard and put some makeup on, and then...
That's not going to turn him into his wife.
Have you seen her?
Ouch.
Oh.
I think it scuppered her plans of leaving the country while he was out of the country. Damn it! Yeah.
Maybe he's just really possessive.
Yeah.
Having someone watch her.
I don't know. Italy drew 0-0 with Holland. A bad injury to Van Persie.
Oh, such a shame
rubbish,
for him.
6 weeks out.
Yeah, but that's good because originally it looked like it was going to be three months.
No, it's such a shame because he's been in such good form. I think the highlight of the game was it was just a few minutes in. One of the Italian fan ran onto the pitch wearing a Superman shirt that read Cassano in the Nacional.
Cassano
for the national
team. It's a massive nationwide campaign, isn't there?
It's brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's funny. Gigi Buffon said that his summing up of the whole thing was, people should not run onto the field during a game, but it was an amusing gesture and did not cause problems for us. After all, I used to wear the Superman shirt too.
We should start a campaign to get Diamante in there.
Yeah,
I heard something recently, apparently, when West Ham were playing, like they'd used all their subs and to try and G up the team. He started warming up anyway, but it's like running along the touchline, just sort of going, come on, to all the fans, and just sort of like following the ball, essentially.
That's absolutely quality.
Do you remember when Stefan Freund used to do that for Tottenham? Used to, every time there's a throw-in, he used to run over to take it, or he used to go look at the crowd when someone was taking the throw-in. Like, trying to G him up, come on!
whenever I think of Stefan Freund, I think of that picture of Duncan Ferguson strangling him and him just looking absolutely terrified.
And other people jogging up going, don't worry, mate, he does that to everyone.
He likes you.
One of the international friendlies was cancelled, of course, which was Germany versus Chile, and it was cancelled due to the death of Robert Enker, I'm sure everybody's seen. Which is absolutely tragic. And also in the news recently, the Greek club Larissa have confirmed that the Mexican international Antonio de Nigris has died of a suspected heart attack at the age of 31. So absolutely terrible stuff in the last week in football. In another friendly, Spain beat Argentina 2-1. It was a good game, that.
Oh, Alonso's penalty. That was one of the best penalties I've ever seen. Yeah, right on the roof of the net.
Messi scored a penalty as well. Mm. I tell you what, the Argentina, they had a lot of chances. Well, a few chances in that game.
Well, I think they can play without pressure now. It's a friendly. They know they've qualified. You know, they've got a lot of good players. You know, we said it before. I
mean, had any of the players in the squad played for Argentina before, though?
Well, Di Michaelis got the penalty away, didn't he? It was an outrageous handball. Mm. From the man who's like 36 and has got about three caps.
The man at the helm, or so we're told, Diego Maradona, has been banned for 2 months from football after his little media outburst, if you remember. And when he was saying everybody was taking it up the watsit and one thing another to all the journalists. I love this, though. It could have been worse, actually, that ban, but FIFA said they'd taken into consideration the sincere remorse shown by the Argentinian coach. I mean, that's remorse.
I don't believe that.
Yeah, yeah, backhander.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. I don't know if that's the punishment at all, is it? Well, I mean, it's not like they've got any competitive games in the next 2 months, so what difference does it make?
I mean, to be fair, Maradona did put up a good defence. He said that much worse things have happened in football.
Yeah, so, mostly done by you.
Yeah. I love this, though. He said, since I took the post with the national team, I knew that this could happen, and it did. As if it was inevitable he was going to have a
because
terrible...
I am a mouthy guest.
Yeah. I bet he probably said, it's not even the worst thing I've done. It's not even in the top three.
You don't even want to know what the worst thing I've done.
You should have been here in the 90s.
Yeah, it's not the worst thing I've done this week.
That involved a cucumber.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
He said, I'm taking refuge in my team, my family, my daughters. I'd imagine they'd probably come under family.
Yeah.
And in the people from the street.
Yeah.
It makes it sound like make your own minds up there.
It just makes it sound like he's taking loads of people down to a bunker. It's like, we okay? No, let's just get ruined.
I've got nothing to do for 2 months. Where's my air gun? Well,
he said, I'm concentrating on that. On the people without microphones, not on what the media says.
Is he going to take that time off he's got to go and pay his tax bill in Italy? Probably not.
Has he won the Euro lottery recently? Exactly. Probably not. Eddie Howe, Bournemouth manager.
Ex-Pompey as well.
Oh.
He signed for Pompey a number of years ago. really highly rated, and he got a terrible knee injury on his debut, and he eventually had to retire. So
bloody knees!
He's the youngest right. man. Yeah, isn't it? He's the youngest manager in the Football League, I believe, and Bournemouth are top. Ooh. And he kept him up after a points reduction last season, so he's very highly rated.
Well, maybe that's why he's turned down the Peterborough United job.
I think he sees a Bournemouth as a long term thing. I think
that's good.
Fair play to him. Yeah,
that's good. Darren Ferguson, of course, left Peterborough United by mutual consent.
Pete, you were loving the Barry Fry press conference, weren't you?
Yeah, he sort of like he unhooked his tongue and just went, "Oh well, I think he's got another job personally." And the and the chairman was going, "No, don't say that, Barry." He was effectively sort of going, "Don't say that, Barry."
Did the chairman go, "Direct all your questions to me"?
They sort of smelled a rat and they were going, "So Barry, what do you think about it?" "Oh well, I think he's he's definitely he's been tapped out. We all get tapped out, don't we?" And the chairman's got his head in his hands. Yeah. And wonderful.
Yeah, yeah.
That is super. Do you think he's
think he's going to hold, don't you?
I wouldn't be surprised.
No.
No, neither would Pete.
He's rated Ferguson, isn't he?
Absolutely. In
his jeans. Give him the Scotland job.
Yeah. could do worse.
Yeah.
Emails of the week. I was a bit quick off the mark then, sorry.
Well,
you've done it.
That's very rare for you.
Yeah, yeah. I'm normally miles away.
Right,
we've
got some emails, James, you can go first.
Cool. Hi, lads, that's us. I was listening to a ramble from months ago last night, and you were joking about old players and the dubious age of certain African players.
We were.
Well, when I was living in Dublin a couple of years ago, I got chatting to the Nigerian taxi driver, as you do. He told me that he was a year behind Kanu when he was in school in Nigeria. He showed me his driver's licence, which said he was 40, putting our man at 41. Cheers, Alex Grant. Right, now, I don't know if you should be trusting the cab drivers in Dublin, but this is interesting. We've spoken about this before. Kanu is claiming on his Wikipedia, I'm sure he doesn't edit it himself, but in all sources it says Kanu 31. Bollocks. No way is Kanu 31. He's been 31 for years, if that's the case.
I've said that to you before. I've always mentioned that. There's no chance. The man can't even run.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he won the double with Arsenal in 1998, which would have made him 20 at the time, and he'd already played for Inter and Ajax.
Yeah.
How is he getting away with
this? I'm just flatly lying.
I know for a fact that a certain member...
Allegedly.
I won't name names, but a certain member of the staff at Portsmouth, when questioned by a journalist on how old he thought Kanu was, just completely broke down in tears laughing, saying there's, you know, the muscles on his legs, there's absolutely zero chance of him being 31. Well, it says a lot of things, because I said to you boys, "Oh, Kanu's only 30 or something," and you were like, "No way! Yeah. He's at least 36, and you have to check it." Yeah, I'm pleased that backs me up, and I, for one, believe taxi drivers from Nigeria over anyone else. So, shall I go next?
Go on, Lukey.
All right, chaps. Hello.
Hey.
I just thought I'd email you to tell you that I totally agree with you about Sean Wright Phillips. Good.
Thank you very much.
But anyway, thanks for your great podcast. I'm a baker and work through the night, starting at midnight, and you keep me company. To this end, I'm thinking of inventing a ramble roll to sell as a special in my shop, and was wondering what fillings you guys would have in it. That's from Steve Hobbs. A ramble roll! Well, imagine that.
Flip it.
Cool.
Spaghetti and baked beans.
An odd one. I think we're more classy than that. I'd say probably lobster stuffed with pheasant.
I think so. Stay true to our roots. Is that going to be expensive to put together? I mean, how much would a lobster stuffed with pheasant roll sell for?
Not a problem, really, is it?
Yeah.
In the words of Prince, I'd go for cream, get on top. I'm thinking like a roll,
a
sweet roll.
A Swiss roll?
Swiss roll.
Oh, yeah, see what you've done.
So if you want to just put all of those together, then there you go.
Perhaps put the cream on the pheasant's beak.
You don't want to put the beak in.
Just poke it out.
When you eat chicken, do you eat its head?
No. Just poking out the
celebrity. Shall we do Football Ramble, come down with me? I've got a pheasant head.
Marcus, you're not in France. Barry, anything.
I thought I was.
This email's from Stefan in Iceland. Dear Ramblers, I was recently catching up on a few old shows, and one in particular inspired me to write you this email. The inauguration of Barry Davies to the Dean Windass Hall of Fame, to be exact. Here in Iceland, we have been football crazed ever since you lovely Brits sent us a week-old match on a black and white VHS many, many winters ago. Our own Barry Davies, or Bjarni Fell, a.k.a. the Red Lion, used to commentate on the first matches, which were, as I said earlier, a week old, thus often proving a superior insight to the game by starting is commentating on a line like this. Keep an eye on player number 9 for Liverpool. I've got a sneaky feeling he will do well today. He was watching videos from a week ago. I love it.
Who is this Nostradamus in football?
And the Red Lion was never wrong. Here are some quotes from Icelandic commentators through the years. There is much competition for competition on the side. We will take a short break and return with the second half from beyond.
What?
He is by far the second leading scorer.
That's a good one, mate.
The match will be televised live on the television. Both teams have now played for 21 minutes.
That's John Motson's goal.
Yeah.
He's got the flip. The card Oliver Kahn was shown in the last match has now been moved to Jens Jeremy's so that Oliver Newville no longer has one.
What is that?
From play, it would probably suit the Germans better to score.
Agreed.
Yeah.
No, no, if you want to score from that far away, you have to come closer.
is that from a coach?
They are excellent. They are excellent. Stefan, thank you very much for that.
Brilliant.
He says, take care and thank you for a great show.
Scandinavia is the source of all things great.
No.
Are you, boy, you're putting Iceland in Scandinavia.
Well, yeah, why not?
We've done it.
Yeah.
And I'd like to say that Iceland are probably the most overachieving team when it comes to international football, obviously, because they don't play in a domestic league.
Yeah.
A nation of only just over 300,000 people.
Yeah. Who do they play? They just play the Oceania, sort of.
Oceania?
Do you think Oceania means teams from the sea?
I thought
we should be in it.
I thought they played in that.
No, they play in the European pot. They've had draws against like France and Germany. Not
300,000. That's nothing. It's just around 9 million people in London alone. Which
sounds like they've been Luton or somewhere, isn't it? You know,
Marcus, who's the Championship Manager goodie bag going to, mate?
Oh, it's got to be the pioneer of the ramble roll.
Oh, Steve Hobbs.
Steve Hobbs.
Hello, I'm Dean Windass, and this is my Hall of Fame.
Hey! How you doing, Dean? It's Marcus from the Football Ramble here.
How are you? Okay.
Oh, marvellous. Good to have you on the phone. How are you enjoying post-retirement from the game, or are you itching to get back into football somehow?
I haven't missed football at the moment. I thought I would have done it, but I haven't, obviously, working with, doing a bit of commentary and working with Sky is keeping me busy, but, yeah, obviously want to get into management sometime, but, you know, in no rush, trying to get the right job and when the right job comes along for me, and then I'll pursue it that way, really.
Well, we saw a clip of you on Sky Sports News, and you were doing the hoovering. Is that what's been keeping you busy of late?
Yeah, we just had a bit of a laugh and joke about it. The cameras come down, I sort of said that, do you want me to do the hoovering because I've got no else to do? But since then, really, I've been, you know, obviously Sky and, you know, a few football shows have been, you know, wanting me to go on, and I've been busy the last sort of two or three weeks, so it's been good.
Marvellous. In your football career, what would you say was the biggest achievement?
I think that every young footballer, especially, you know, myself being, as a young kid, you know, working in a factory, then on a building site, and then getting released as an 18-year-old at Hull. You know, the biggest achievement for me was, you know, actually signing professional football. I think that every footballer wants to do it. Everybody, you know, give the right hand to be footballers. And, you know, fortunate for me, I got the, you know, second bite of the cherry, and, you know, I took it with both hands. And, you know, to say that I've been in it 20 years, you know, it's quite amazing, really.
Absolutely. What about the volley in the playoff final? Would that rank up there with one of the best moments?
I think that, you know, obviously, you talk about goals, and I was very fortunate to play, I think it was nearly 800 games, and, you know, to score a goal like that in that environment and being a Hull lad and to take your team, you know, you supported as a 5-year-old, you know, going on the terraces with my dad at Belfry Park. You know, it was right the Rover stuff, really. You couldn't, you know, people say you couldn't write the script. I always said it was either going to be me or Nicky Barn, because Nicky's a whole lad as well. But
absolutely, yeah.
Nicky didn't have that in his locker, really, to be fair.
Dean, it's Luke here from the Football Ramble. Nice to talk to you, mate.
Right. Okay.
It is Roy the Rover stuff, like you say, because you're a Hull City fan, aren't you?
Yeah.
What was going through your head when you hit that volley? Can you remember, or was it just all a bit of a blur?
I think the day was a bit of a blur. You know, the only time that it really sinks in is when you sort of sat in the players' lounge having a pint afterwards. We hit with all the players and the family, and then sort of watching the goal again. And I can, you know, you do remember, you know, the goal itself, and I can remember being on the right side of Barnes when I nodded. I can remember nodding the ball down to Nicky Barnby, and he sort of ran, and then you watch the goal again, but Fraser slipped and then he went through. And I thought, because me and Fraser were going through a bit of we had a bet who'd be top goal scorer at the end of the season. Well, he was on 15 goals and I was on 14 at that time, and I thought,
that's a lovely way to tie it up.
Yeah, well, when it went through, I thought, when the lad slipped, I think it was Carey who slipped, I thought Fraser was going to shoot with his left foot, but then obviously checked back and I'd seen Nicky Barnby go to the back stick and run into the box. And what I got taught was a kid, when I was a kid, was that when somebody goes to the bar line, naturally the defenders go towards their goal, and I always used to step out or stand still, and somebody pull the ball back and you tap it in. But Nicky had gone in. Everybody else had gone in with Nicky and the goalkeeper, obviously. As he's chipped it, I thought that there was a Bristol City a player behind me. And I was going to have a touch. I thought, well, have I got time to have a touch and then hit it or whatever? But I don't know. Listen, I don't know why I hit it first time. And
Dean, we do have one question that needs answering. It's, we have the Dean Windass Hall of Fame on this podcast.
Yeah.
Is there a particular player that stands out for you who you'd like to induct into your Hall of Fame?
My idol, which I think everybody will tell you, and I don't know if somebody watched Vinnie Jones last night on the Piers Morgan show, and he was sort of, he's come from the same background as me, as a building site, and then went on and, next I could be a film star, it's one of them, but I wish. I could be on Emmerdale or Coro, probably, that'll be about it. I think that the way Vinnie said was that when you're a young kid and you're watching these lads who you want to be or you want to play against, match of the day, things like that. Vinnie Jones said he had the opportunity to do that, and he mentioned the boy Mr. Gascoigne, and I think that I watched Gazza when I was a young, when he was at Newcastle, and I used to get his DVDs and watch things like that, and because he was a funny lad and he was a normal lad, and he used to go back to his roots and go for a beer on a Sunday with his lads who worked for a living, and so it never changed, really. And I always said that I'd never ever change, the success and financial things that you get in life. I would never change, and I'd be pretty upset if people said that I was a big time or whatever, because, that's not in my makeup. So I think I would like Mr. Gascoigne to be on my Hall of Fame, if that would be possible.
Dean, that's more than possible. We thank you very much for that recommendation.
Because I played against him, and the first time I did play against him, my wife used to say to me, Aberdeen Rangers, and he used to always come out last, did Gazza, and then get a standing ovation from his love supporters of Rangers. And I can remember I couldn't stop staring at him, when he first came out, when they were doing the warm-up. And then I can remember playing, and obviously because people used to say I looked a bit like him and, messed about like him. And I never modelled myself on that. That was just in my makeup as well, I think. But he nutmegged me the first time he went near me and called it like. And I never lived it, right at the end of the game. And the one thing about the boy is that before the game, when we'd come out, I said, look, Joshua was 2-year-old at the time. I says, could I have a photo after the game? This is even before the game, down the tunnel. Can I have a photo with my lad and yourself? He says, no problem. So what he'd done was, because there was hatred between Rangers and Aberdeen, the bus used to park right near where the door was, so their players could just jump straight on the bus. And Gazza went on the bus, and I was in the players' lounge, and I sort of went out to see if he'd gone. I thought, he's gone, he's on the bus. And then about 15 minutes later, he'd come running back out, and he'd come in the players' lounge and said, oh, sorry, I forgot that you wanted a photo. And that was the type of lad he was, and we got the photo with Joshua and himself.
So. He came all the way back for you?
He came back for me, yeah.
That's absolutely fantastic.
And I think that, when you sort of model yourself on that, I know that, I was with him the other week playing in the game, and, he's going through bad times, but, he's a gentleman, and he'll give anybody his money, his last pound coin if you were struggling, and that sort of lad he is.
Absolutely. Dean, thank you so much for talking to us. We'll be getting Gazza into the Dean Windass Hall of Fame at some point.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dean Windass.
Cheers, mate.
Thanks for talking to us, Dean, and good luck with your career. Thank you very much, Dean. The celebrity-sanctioned Dean Windass Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Can't argue with that.
No, we won't. but it is profile time, of course. And I was recently we had Remembrance Day and, people wearing the poppies in and around Britain and so on. And I was looking through the history books and seeing players who were in the army as well. Mm. And one just leapt out at me. And, ladies and gentlemen, I bring to the table Walter Tull. Now, you might not have heard of this man, but he was the first black officer in the British Army, but the second black player ever to play in the top division of the Football League.
Brilliant.
In this country. So quite a magnificent man already.
Pioneer.
He liked shooting.
He did.
Yeah.
Good. I see what you've done there, Pete. So here we are. Walter Tull, born in Folkestone in Kent, on the 28th of April, 1888.
79 years before the Summer of Love.
My giddy aunt.
That would also make him the first black man to join the British Army, play in the top division in English football, and win the sperm race.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely unbelievable stuff.
Well, he wasn't the first one to play in the top division of the Football League. He was the second one.
Well, he did bloody well, Mark.
Yeah.
I'll thank you not to take that away from him.
But he's a gold medalist in my eyes. Yeah. So, yeah, he was born in Folkestone, as we were saying. His father was the son of a slave and had arrived from Barbados in 1876. But he'd married a girl from Kent. He had a tough upbringing. His parents died when he was young, and he moved when he was very young to Bethnal Green in East London, of course. But after finishing school, he played a lot of football, and he had a trial at Clapton, who were an East London amateur club. And by the beginning of the 1908-1909 season, he was playing for their first team. And he was a talented inside forward. And Clapton had a very successful season. They won the Amateur Cup, the London Senior Cup, the London County Amateur Cup. And the local paper, the Football Star, said they praised Tull's clever footwork and described him as being the catch of the season. And because of this, Tottenham Hotspur came knocking, and he decided that he wanted to join them. So Tull was signed by Tottenham Hotspur, and as we said, he was only the second black man to play professional football in Britain. The first was Arthur Warden, of course, and I think Andrew Watson was the first ever black man to play football, but he was not professional; he was semi-pro. And in May 1909, Walter Tull and Tottenham Hotspur went on a tour of South America. It's crazy to think that back then.
Yeah, yeah. Must have taken them ages to get there.
Well, yeah, exactly. but they did, and they played games in Argentina and Uruguay. So he was the first black player ever to play football in South America.
Oh, that's mental.
That's amazing.
Yeah, as far back
so
as
they didn't even have leagues in 1909.
Oh, Brazil
didn't have a proper professional top division until like 1970s or something.
Yeah, mental. No, absolutely.
They had won two World Cups, Brazil, or three, I think, before they got a proper organised nationwide league. That's a fact.
Incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. it's quite in a letter he wrote to a friend of his when he was out there. He said that he was suffering from sunstroke, and he complained that none of the waiters spoke English. So without
abroad.
Well, absolutely, without a doubt, this man's British credentials cannot be questioned. But he was given considerable praise for his early performances. Playing for Tottenham, the Daily Chronicle said that Tull's display against Manchester United must have astounded everyone who saw it. Such perfect coolness and such clinical waiting for a fraction of a second in order to get a pass in before the defender has worked to a false position, and such accuracy in the strength of passing. And during the first half, Tull, I love how the journalist puts this, he said, during the first half, Tull just compelled Curtis, who was one of his teammates, to play a good game. For Curtis, who was the outside right, was plied with such a series of passes that it made it almost impossible for him to do anything other than well.
That's class.
So, I mean, getting these kind of write-ups back in the day, he seemed he was much more ahead of his time, Walter Tull. And against a game at Bradford City on October the 4th, 1909. I mean, 1909.
Yeah.
You know, the Daily Chronicle wrote that he was a class superior to that shown by the rest of his colleagues. Unfortunately, there was an infamous match that Tottenham had against Bristol City in October 1909, and he was the target of racial abuse from the home supporters. Now, of course, back in those days, when we're talking serious, you know, racism was unfortunately...
widespread, I suppose.
A norm, really. Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're not even talking 50s here. We're talking 1909, for crying out loud. One of the journalists from the Football Star wrote, quite angry, "Let me tell those Bristol hooligans that Tull is so clean in mind and method as to be a model for all white men who play football, the best forward on the field."
Mm.
However, this incident at Bristol embarrassed some of the Spurs officials. So what did they do? Well, in their impudent wisdom, they dropped Walter Tull to the reserves.
Oh,
Putting off the problem at the start.
Yeah, yeah.
Idiots.
Yeah. Exactly. So we...
head into the grave, so they blame the hearse.
Well, he made only three more appearances for the first team, which was a crying shame. He scored 10 goals in 27 league games with the reserves. But, he got a bit fed up of his lack of first-team appearances. And in February 1911, he came to the attention of Northampton Town Football Club when Northampton were beaten 7-1 by Spurs in the reserve team fixture, and Tull scored a hat-trick. And he was later transferred which was described as a heavy transfer fee, to Northampton Town in the Southern League. And he was signed by... Herbert Chapman.
Oh, he's in the Dean Windows Hall of Fame.
There you are, you see. They all know each other in there.
Yeah.
You know, they're
like an old boys' club.
Well, exactly.
They're getting a bit too big for their boots, actually, I must say.
well, Dean Windows is here to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And of course, we know Chapman went on to manage Huddersfield and Arsenal and so on and so forth. Tull scored 4 goals in one match once playing inside forward for Northampton Town. And he played over 100 games for Northampton as a wing half. I'm sure we can all relate to that position.
Yeah.
Other clubs wanted to sign Walter Tull. In 1914, Glasgow Rangers started negotiations with Northampton Town. However, before he could play for them, First World War was declared. And Tull, being the magnificent man he was, immediately abandoned his career and offered his services to join the British Army. Now, military rules had initially prevented black people joining white regiments. But Tull, like a lot of other professional football players, he joined the football battalion.
Yeah, famous.
Absolutely. Mm. The army soon recognised Tull's leadership qualities, and he was quickly promoted to rank of sergeant. Mm. So not only has he smashed down the rules of no black men joining white regiments, they've put him to sergeant, his qualities. Yeah. You know.
That wasn't allowed back then, was it? You weren't allowed to hold a certain station in the British Army if you were a black guy.
Well, that's right. Well, he did so well in battle that senior officers recommend that he should be given further promotion, so he was had officer training. He became an officer in the army, which went completely in the face of the military regulations, which forbidded any person of as it states here, any person of colour to become an officer. So he became the first black combat officer in the British Army, which is absolutely incredible. And as Phil Vasili has pointed out, and he wrote the book Colouring Over the White Line, which is all about the history of black footballers in Britain. He said, according to the manual of military law, black soldiers of any rank were not desirable. During the First World War, military chiefs of staff, with government approval, argued that white soldiers would not accept orders by men of colour, and on no account should black soldiers serve on the front line.
Different world.
Walter Tull, awful. He just smashed it, kicked the door down.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, in fact, he was massively endorsed by all the other sergeants and all the other higher-ranking officers. They want him in because they recognised his quality. Unfortunately, on March the 25th, 1918, Walter Tull was ordered to lead his men on an attack on the German trenches, and he died at the age of just 29, which was absolutely, a real big shame. And a lot of his men actually made valiant efforts under heavy fire from German machine guns to try and save him, because they loved him, absolutely loved him. The man was... held in such high esteem. And so, at the age of 29, he died. But what an amazing story of, here was this orphaned black guy from East London who was a top amateur footballer, then a top professional footballer, and then a top officer in the army. An absolutely incredible story. And the road which runs behind the North Stand at Sixfield Stadium, where Northampton Town play, is named Walter Tull Way. And in 2004, Tottenham Hotspur and Rangers contested the Walter Tull Memorial Cup.
Brilliant.
And Rangers won 2-0. Plans are underway to make a film about his life, and two films have been made for Teachers TV, which is focusing on the teaching about Walter Tull, and that was launched in May 2008. And on Sunday, the 11th of July 1999, Northampton Town unveiled a memorial to Walter Tull in a dedicated Garden of Remembrance at Sixfield Stadium. The epitaph was written by Phil Vasili, who, as I said, was the author of Colouring Over the White Line, History of Black Footballers in Britain, which is my book of the week. The inscription reads, "Through his actions, Tull ridiculed the barriers of ignorance that tried to deny black people equality with their contemporaries. His life stands testament to a determination to confront those people and those obstacles that sought to diminish him and the world in which he lives. It reveals a man, though rendered breathless in his prime, whose strong heart still beats loudly today."
Welcome,
Walter Tull.
What a worthy entrant.
Absolutely.
Excellent stuff.
I'm sure Dean would agree.
Yeah.
If he hadn't gone off to go and do some overing.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is the end of the show. I hope you've had a thrilling time. I certainly have. If you'd like to get in touch, the email address is podcast@thefootballramble.com. Of course, we've got the Cult Zeros banner on the website, so you can get your Dean Windass Hall of Fame T-shirts on there. Pete, you've got something to say?
Yeah, I've got lots to say, but specifically about the Football Ramble, betway.com/thefootballramble. It's where you can put on your bets and that. It's a good laugh. We've got a little competition going, me, Luke. As we may have mentioned in the preceding weeks, me, Luke, Jim and Marcus are trying to test our mettle against each other and predict who's going to win at the weekend and that. So we still got predictions up that we put on a couple of weeks ago because it was international week. We missed out a week. But yeah, they're up there. Have a crack at us if you like.
I'm doing shit so far, but it's a marathon, not a sprint.
Language, Timothy.
His name's Luke.
Yeah.
Say goodbye, Pete.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, James or Jim.
Bye.
Say goodbye, Lukey.
Adios.
I think we're all for a ramble roll.
You're on a ramble roll.
Hello, this is Dean Windass, and you're talking to the Football Roundup. No, do that again.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.